From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. In August of 2016, President Obama's Department of Justice said they were pulling the plug on some private prison contracts. Now, private prisons are big business in America, raking in billions of dollars each year. With the Justice Department's announcement, Corrections Corporation of America and other big players in the industry saw their stock value plummet. Enter President Donald Trump. And in just a few months, his Justice Department reversed course on private prisons, and their ledgers are back in the black, with their stock value soaring. Corrections Corporation of America changed its name to CoreCivic and continues to run private prisons around the country. And that's not changing anytime soon. Today, we're going inside one of those prisons by revisiting a story we originally aired last year. It's a foggy morning in November 2014. Shane Bauer, a wiry 30-something with a goatee and glasses, wakes up in his cramped apartment in rural Louisiana. He's nervous and anxious. Today is the day he's been preparing for weeks. He's about to start his new job as a guard at a private prison.
Wynn Correctional Center is in the middle of the Kisatchie National Forest. It's basically a forest of yellow pines, sort of crosshatched with dirt roads. And you drive through this forest, and the forest clears, and you see what kind of looks like a factory, you know, a very utilitarian-type building, some guard towers, barbed wire.
It's a tough prison. Guards like Shane don't carry weapons. It's not long before he starts getting death threats from inmates.
And they start threatening to riot. They're saying to us, if you don't let us out of here, we're going to put this prison on the news.
The news is something Shane is pretty familiar with. He's a reporter for Mother Jones Magazine, and he spent 4 months working at Wynn Correctional Center to find out what life inside a private prison is really like.
Prisons generally are very hard to get access to, and private prisons in particular are even more secretive.
And that includes Wynn. It's run by Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, a private company that routinely turns away journalists and refuses to release records that government-run prisons would be required to share.
I decided that, you know, I really wanted to have a completely unfiltered look, you know, where I'm not getting all the information through a prison spokesperson or a company spokesperson or a prisoner that might have a reason to lie or to bend the truth.
Shane buys a pen that doubles as an audio recorder and a watch that takes videos. He also has a notepad to jot down his observations. Shane documents everything he can, and most nights after his shift, he goes back to his apartment, sets up his camera on a tripod, and talks about his day.
It's crazy to be in a prison, and it's also, on top of it, crazy to feel like I'm this infiltrator, kind of, you know? And if they find out, they're going to be pissed.
Through recordings, interviews with Shane, other guards, and inmates, we're going to take you inside Wynn Correctional Center. This is not a story for young listeners. The U.S. locks up more people than any other country on Earth. We have about 5% of the world's population and more than 20% of its prison population. Now, to deal with that overcrowding, the U.S. turned to private prisons. Those private companies make big money. CCA, the company that runs the prison where Shane gets a job, takes in $1.9 billion a year. That's billion with a B. Its stock is traded on Wall Street. So what does that mean for inmates and guards when a for-profit company is running things? That's what we're going to find out with Shane. And we begin on the day he applied for the job.
Basically, I went on the website of the Corrections Corporation of America and filled out an application, sent it off, and that was that.
Shane put his real name on the application and the Foundation for National Progress as his current employer. Now, that's the publisher of Mother Jones.
And they did do a criminal background check as part of the process, but I'm guessing they didn't use Google.
If they had Googled him, they would have found out who Shane is. An author who co-wrote a book about the 2 years he spent in an Iranian prison, and a reporter who's covered police militarization, the Middle East, and prisons. So his chances of getting a job with CCA seemed like a stretch.
To be honest with you, I didn't think it was going to happen.
But a few weeks after he clicks apply, Shane gets word. He's hired. He passes his physical and drug tests and gets a white polyester button-down shirt and slate gray pants. To blend in, he picks up a camouflage baseball cap from a thrift store and buys a beat-up Dodge Ram pickup truck.
The first time that I went in there, I mean, I was very nervous. When I got to the entrance of the prison, there was a security check, and I had to turn off the truck, get out of the truck. I had audio equipment just laying on the seat, and a dog came and sniffed the truck. And my heart was pounding this whole time, and I thought that was it. But the dog smelled the passenger side, came around to the driver's side, smelled it, and they let me go.
When training begins, Shane joins a group of cadets in a concrete block building just outside the prison. The classroom walls are white and flatly lit with overhead fluorescent lights. A red, white, and blue CCA logo is painted on the wall, and in bold letters above a dry erase board, it says, "Excellence in Corrections."
We went over things like CPR, policies on the use of force. We, you know, were taught what to do if we see inmates fighting or, you know, violence. We were basically told to just tell them to stop and call for backup.
That backup comes from the SWAT team, CCA's version of a SWAT unit rolling through wind like stormtroopers. They're the only ones who carry any kind of weapon. In training, one of Shane's instructors is the captain of the SWAT team.
He told us basically the protocol in that prison is to verbally tell them to stop, and that's it. Back out, lock the room, and as he said, let them cut each other up. So I was really surprised by that. What he said was, you know, you don't make a lot of money. The next time you get a raise, it's not going to be for much. So it's not worth it, you know?
All the guards have something in common. They need a job, even one that doesn't pay much.
Private prisons in generally, these companies like the Corrections Corporation of America, their main argument is, look, we can save the state money. We can do this cheaper than the state can do it. The main way that they save money is in staffing. At state-run prisons, guards were making $12.50 an hour. At this prison, they were making $9 an hour.
That's less than $19,000 a year.
There was a lot of single moms working as prison guards, and at the Walmart, they couldn't get more than 39 hours to qualify for benefits, and at this job, they could. In training, one of the trainers said, if you're breathing and you have a driver's license and are willing to work, we're willing to hire you. I mean, they were really desperate for employees.
As training continues, cadets learn basic self-defense, how to put on shackles. They also get sprayed with tear gas. So they know what it feels like.
And we just had to stand there as this cloud kind of wafted into our faces. I thought I was going to throw up. I wanted to throw up, but couldn't. I couldn't breathe. It was nasty.
Wynn has tear gas training because the SWAT team uses a lot of chemical agents. Tear gas and other chemical sprays are the way they maintain order. If a riot breaks out, tear gas. Fighting or stabbing, pepper spray. These are the go-to non-lethal weapons.
After I left Wynn, through some public records requests with Louisiana Department of Corrections, I found that over the first 4 months of 2015, which is when I was there, Wynn reported using chemical agents like pepper spray and tear gas 79 times. That's 7 times more frequent than Angola prison, which is the maximum security prison in Louisiana. It was more than any prison by far in the rest of the state.
Shane and the other cadets also spend time in the prison as part of their training.
I went in with my group of cadets. You know, we're walking as a group, and some of the prisoners are kind of eyeing the female guards, making comments. You know, I'm trying to kind of be friendly, you know, say hello to them, but also not seem too friendly and trying to not seem afraid, really, is what I'm focusing on, because I am.
The cadets travel up the middle lane from the administration building as prisoners move down their designated side lanes.
We walk down this narrow kind of walkway fenced in, And as we got close to it, I could hear from inside the building shouting.
Cadets are about to enter the segregation unit. It's like solitary confinement, except in most cases, two prisoners share one cell that's 8 feet wide and 8 feet long.
And the door opened, and it was just this cacophony inside of, like, doors banging, people yelling, screaming. It was just, like, felt really chaotic. And the reason that they took us there was to show us suicide watch. We got to the gate of this unit, and the guard on staff opened the gate and said to us, "Welcome to the hellhole. Welcome to the dungeon."
After 4 weeks, Shane graduates to become a full-fledged corrections officer, or CO. His first real day on the job, he returns to suicide watch. There are two cells covered in plexiglass. Now, Shane's job is to watch the inmates and take notes every 15 minutes.
One of the guys that I'm watching for hours is staring at me and masturbating. I'm telling him to stop. That only encourages him. And, you know, so it's like we're all stuck in this situation that we really don't want to be in. It's miserable.
Suicide watch is the only place at Wynn where one guard is watching just two inmates. That is expensive. The mental health director tells Shane the sparse conditions are supposed to be a deterrent, so people won't want to be on suicide watch. In other words, they make it as unpleasant as possible. People bang on the plexiglass, sometimes begging for more food. CCA says inmates on suicide watch get just as many calories as everyone else. But that's not what Shane saw.
Prisoners on suicide watch have different meals than the rest of the inmates. They get what are called suicide bags, which are basically a brown bag lunch that has one bologna sandwich, one peanut butter sandwich, six carrot sticks, and six apple sticks. When you add that up, the amount of calories come to significantly less than what the USDA recommends for most men.
Damian Costley is another inmate Shane guards on suicide watch that day. He's a super thin, young African-American man. He's in for murder and is wrapped up in his suicide blanket, a thin, tear-proof garment that doubles as a smock. It's the only thing allowed inside a suicide watch cell besides toilet paper. No reading material and no mattress. Just a steel bunk.
He's saying if I don't move, he's going to get up on this top bunk, jump off the bed, and break his neck.
Damien is frequently in and out of suicide watch. Some of the other guards say he's faking, but getting a professional opinion isn't easy. There's just one psychologist and one psychiatrist, both part-time, and a full-time social worker for 1,500 inmates.
He tells me he's having a mental health emergency, which I report, but it takes about 6 hours for a psychiatrist to show up and talk to him. They talk through the bars for a couple of minutes.
And this is your first day?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you shocked by that?
I was very shocked. It was really kind of an awakening. It's like, okay, I'm really starting this. I'm going to be doing this every day.
Coming up, day two and beyond.
Today, I lost it. I snapped. I had an explosion of anger that I don't remember the last time I had.
This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.